You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including another tax extension for cannabis growers in Humboldt County, a key decision in a Grants Pass homelessness lawsuit, and why the state of California is also opposing a wind energy project in Shasta County. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
And I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
And I'm Roman Battaglia, politics, environment, and energy reporter.
Well, Rowan, you reported on a win for the Shasta County government related to that proposed wind farm. What happened there?
Yeah, so this project called the Fountain Wind Project is currently under consideration by the California Energy Commission. It's through this program called the Opt-In Certification Program. It's this new program that state lawmakers passed a couple years ago to fast-track green energy projects in the state because they're trying to build more renewable energy there. Basically, if you follow certain requirements for the program, the CEC can approve your project, and then you can bypass local and county permitting as well as some state permits. So it makes it easier. You don't have to go through as many permits. So an assessment just came out by the CEC staff reviewing this project, and they recommended denying the project, which is good for Shasta County because the county government at least did not like the project.
Well, why did they not like it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. They have a lot. I actually do know they have a lot of different reasons.
One is
you're here. Yeah, one is that they don't like this certification program because it bypasses the county's permitting process. They would like to have a say in, you know, the projects get approved in the county. You know, basically, if someone's approved through this program, they could just build in Shasta County without any permission from Shasta County at all, really. This proposed wind farm was already rejected by the Shasta County Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors, and the Board of Supervisors even banned large wind farms in the county. Another big concern is wildfires. Both the transmission lines and the wind turbines could start wildfires, and then also the turbines themselves are like 600 feet tall, which I think they said is twice the size of the Statue of Liberty, which could prevent helicopters and planes from doing firefighting, dropping fire retardant from above, which according to Cal Fire is kind of a yes and no. The wind turbines would definitely impede firefighting efforts and could make it more difficult, but it probably wouldn't be a complete like no-fly zone like the county has said. You know, the county's also said that tribal cultural resources in the region would be impacted, as well as like visual disruptions, you know, just seeing the wind turbines. Some people don't like the sea. People don't like seeing turbines, I guess.
Well, to each their own. Yeah. What does the assessment say about the Fountain Wind Project?
Yeah, it basically said that the project was not necessary. It said that the environmental harms, like things we talked about, outweighed the good, you know, of being a renewable energy project. A lot of the reasons they stated were similar to the county's. Plus, they had mentioned the county's objections in their assessment. It was a huge assessment. It was like 1,300 pages.
And you read every single word.
I read every single word, yes, of course. Interestingly, the staff instead recommended a battery storage project be built there instead of a wind farm. Battery storage is really important for the green energy transition because, you know, solar energy only generates power in the day. Wind energy only generates it intermittently. So that could be really helpful, and it wouldn't interfere with firefighting abilities. It would store that extra energy and release it when it's needed. I don't know if that's something the developer is considering or not. They didn't respond to my emails, but you know, the CEC staff certainly seemed excited about a battery storage project.
So what's next for this project?
Yeah, so this is just the staff report. It's not a final decision from the CEC. There'll be more public comments, and then there's going to be a final staff assessment, and then the commission itself will actually consider the project. But, you know, the staff assessment can definitely influence the commission's decision, but it's not guaranteed that they're going to go with what staff recommend. I've certainly seen, you know, commissions go against what their staff recommend all the time. So we'll have to see what happens when the commission takes up, you know, the project and considers it.
Okay. Well, Jane, you covered a hearing this week that's part of a lawsuit in Grants Pass. Tell us, what is this case about?
So this was a lawsuit that was filed in January by Disability Rights Oregon and five homeless plaintiffs against the city of Grants Pass. And they're claiming that the city's treatment of homeless people is violating state law. Number one, state disability protections. They're arguing it's discriminating against people with disabilities. And number two, this state law, House Bill 3115, which says that cities' public camping ordinances have to be, quote, objectively reasonable, which is not clearly defined. And so that's the argument in the lawsuit, and the complaints really date back to the fall. The city had two homeless campsites, and homeless people were required to move their stuff from site to site every week. At one point, they also closed one campsite down, and they only had one site for a period of time. And then since the lawsuit, the city has been sort of trying to make it better and prove that they are following state law, trying to be more ADA compliant. They now have two campsites open. So that's what's happening there.
Well, you know, I think we all know about the lawsuit from Grants Pass that went to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. How is this one different?
Yeah, so that ruling was last June. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled in the city's favor. That was another lawsuit over Grants Pass's treatment of homeless people. That case actually dates back to 2018. But the argument in that case focused on the constitutional ban on cruel and unusual punishment. So the question is it cruel and unusual punishment if you're ticketing or fining someone for being outside when there's nowhere else for them to go? So that was the question in that case. But this one is relating to state law, though, not Constitution, not the Eighth Amendment. So it's a different argument.
Yeah. And so what was this specific hearing that you went to about?
Yeah. So the hearing was on Tuesday afternoon. And the question there was whether or not to impose what's called a preliminary injunction. And so that would prevent the city from enforcing its public camping ordinances while the lawsuit is playing out. So it's kind of a pause while the lawsuit finishes. So homeless people couldn't be cited, ticketed, arrested, anything for camping in public for the duration of the injunction. Obviously, they could still be charged if there were other crimes committed, but not for that specific thing. And there has been a temporary restraining order in place in this case for a little while. It keeps getting extended, which is similar. It's a temporary ban on the city enforcing its public camping ordinances. That expires on Saturday night. That's been sort of done in 10-day chunks. They keep extending it. And this preliminary injunction that the judge might decide to impose would be longer term, still temporary injunction.
Until there's a ruling.
Correct. Yeah.
And so what did the judge decide?
She hasn't decided yet. So there was 2 hours of testimony Tuesday afternoon. The city argued that their campsites are not objectively unreasonable just because they're imperfect, paraphrasing there. They want the case to go to a jury trial rather than have the judge decide to impose an injunction now. The lawyer for the plaintiffs basically argued the city is being unreasonable. The temporary restraining order has been working, he says, and so the judge should extend it as a preliminary injunction as the lawsuit plays out. But the judge, her name is Sarah McLaughlin, just took it all under advisement, and she said she'll make a decision sometime this week. As I said, the temporary restraining order expires tomorrow, and so I have been refreshing the website today to see her decision. There's nothing yet. The thing that I think is interesting is that Grants Pass only recently had an injunction lifted after 4 years from that previous court case, the Supreme Court one. And so that was 4 years long, so they're really trying not to have another years-long injunction over their treatment of homeless people. And there is some irony here because there was this new Supreme Court decision. Other cities across the country are kind of tightening their camping regulations. We've seen that. But if there is a new injunction, if the judge decides to have a new injunction in Grants Pass, then the city where the Supreme Court case originated would kind of have its hands tied and they wouldn't really be able to tighten their camping regulations. So we'll have to see what the judge decides.
Okay, well, thank you for that. Justin, you reported on an update to a tax on cannabis cultivation in Humboldt County. Tell us, what happened this week?
Yeah, so this week the county decided to give cannabis growers a bit more time to settle up their tax bill. Again, they've delayed revoking growers' licenses before that haven't paid off their taxes. They've done it a couple times before. So now growers have until the end of the year, as long as they've made some payments towards that tax bill or entered into some payment plan with the county. So those growers that haven't made any payments to the county yet have until the first week of April, actually, to do that, or they'll get their licenses revoked. If they do make a payment, they'll be put into this other category, and then they'll have until the end of the year. So just some background, Humboldt County voters passed the Measure S cannabis cultivation tax in 2016, and that charges businesses between $1 and $3 per square foot of cultivation area. And those taxes go to county services, including cleaning up kind of abandoned cultivation sites. And the reason the county keeps extending this deadline for paying the tax is because growers, especially small plot growers in southern Humboldt County, are really struggling right now. Prices for cannabis have dropped significantly since the measure was passed, so it's not the good old days like early on in legalization. And according to the county, around 600 growers still owe taxes, so they're the ones at risk of actually losing their licenses. That's about a third of all legal operations in the county. And these taxes are significant. They can be tens of thousands of dollars. A farmer I spoke with says, if these licenses are revoked, it would really be an extinction-level event for small legal cannabis growers in the county.
Wow. So what's up with that cannabis market in Humboldt County? What's causing all this?
So like I mentioned, farmers are struggling. This has to do with low prices. The price for wholesale cannabis has plummeted as supply has increased. And the board meeting this week in Humboldt was filled with farmers kind of talking about how they're at risk of losing their business. A lot of them are locals that have been there for decades. I spoke with a cannabis economist at UC Davis this week also about what's going on, and he says this drop in prices was really expected after legalization. Weed is basically starting to look like other legal crops, like corn or something. Mm-hmm. And he actually said he would expect the prices to continue to drop. Ironically, you know, these taxes and regulations that the farmers are complaining about, those barriers to entry are the things that are keeping weed prices a little bit higher. So without that tax and stuff, the price would probably continue to drop further.
Wow. And so where do farmers go from here?
So according to the county, around 76% of active licensed cannabis farmers still, you know, have paid off their Measure S taxes. So there are a lot of farmers still in compliance. But for the last 4 years, the county's either suspended or reduced this tax. This year, it's exempted again. But the county is having second thoughts on whether this tax even makes sense with this current market. A staff report raises the question about whether there might be a better approach to cannabis taxation. I'll just read a quote from that. Measure S does not produce the income expected. It is cumbersome to implement, puts additional burdens on farmers, which is arguably not where the tax burden should be placed, and is diverting staff time from other things that could be more beneficial to the county. So the planning department, the county itself, is pretty critical of this tax as well. We'll see what happens in the future. There's at least a possibility that Measure S will be changed or something like that. Yeah. If it goes to voters.
Well, Roman, you've spent a lot of time covering Shasta County this week. You also told us about something going on with the Shasta County Department of Elections. What happened there?
Yeah, so the current county clerk, Tom Toller, announced his resignation. He's going to be stepping down at the end of April, and he was only in the position for less than a year. He was appointed last June to fill the seat of the previous clerk, who also stepped down.
And why is he resigning?
He said he has a serious illness that makes it impossible to focus on the job and his health at the same time. I don't think this is related to the job itself based on the statement. The last clerk also stepped down because of health issues, but she clearly said it was mostly because of health issues caused by stress of the position itself.
And, you know, a county clerk stepping down, what makes this interesting enough for us to cover?
Yeah, so specifically Shasta County, has faced a lot of pressure from right-wing activists on the elections department itself. They've wanted to get rid of voting machines in the county and move back to hand-counting ballots and doing it in one day. And they actually did do it. I mean, they ordered the elections department to do this a couple of years ago. It ended up being a big story. I covered it a lot. It was going to cost millions. You know, hand-counting has been proven to be less accurate and more time-consuming. It was going to require a bunch of people to do all this work. But the state ended up stepping in and banning hand-counting in most elections in the state and requiring the use of machines. So the county clerk at the time, Kathy Darling Allen, was essentially sort of the guardian of the election system. She kind of prevented it from, you know, crumbling underneath the threats that were happening there and kind of publicly fought back against some of these county supervisors. So people were kind of worried about her replacement being appointed by those same supervisors. Despite Tom Toller having no experience in elections, he ended up doing an okay job. I mean, he worked with the assistant clerk to mostly smoothly run the November election. There were some hiccups, but it wasn't necessarily their fault of those hiccups, but they managed them, decently well enough.
So how is Shasta County planning on filling this position?
Yeah, so the county supervisors actually just had a special meeting about it last night. The position has to be filled by the county supervisors. They can't call a special election. Last time there was this recruitment and open interview process, and this time they voted to do the same thing again. A lot of residents wanted to you know, they called on the county to save money and time by just appointing the assistant county clerk, Joanna Franciscat, to the position until the next election. She was actually passed over for the job last time, which was a big thing. But, you know, the majority of supervisors wanted to do another recruitment process again.
And has the board said what they're looking for in a county clerk?
Yeah, this time they set a more stricter requirements on who's going to be able to apply for the job. They didn't have as much requirements last time, so more people will be screened out. They're going to have that open for a couple weeks, pick four or five candidates, and then there'll be a public interview process again at the end of April to fill the position until the next person is elected in the next election next year.
Okay, well, there we have it. That's it for the debrief this week. Thank you for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's on our website at ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform.